Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Miracle Manifesting Mondays. My name is Audrey, and I'm here with you as we are, I would say, almost every week, because once in a very, very, very great while, we are not. But here we are. This is the show where you get to experience and know what a miracle you are, we all are. Even in the face of what may look less than miraculous. Today, I am actually going to let you know who our guest is before we introduce her, because she is so very special. We will be speaking with Karen Ellis-Ritter, the co-founder and chair of CompassionateFarming.org, and we will learn what that is later. Right now, allow yourself to get really comfortable. Sit down, take off your shoes. If perchance you're new to this, to our show, and you're doing something that requires your full attention, then absolutely put your full attention on that which you are doing and listen to this as background. However, if you are able to put your full attention here and let go, please do that, because this will help you grow, evolve, and literally raise your vibration and be the miracle that you are. Take off your shoes, loosen anything that's tight, take off your watch, put it where you'll know where it is. I usually take off jewelry that I can feel in any way constricting, and follow along with the sound of my voice. Take in a nice, deep, soft breath into your heart. A cornucopia of shining, sparkling green energy like the grass and the leaves of the trees. Hold and gently exhale. Let's go. Breathe in blue, the blue of a beautiful, beautiful sky. Breathe that right into your crown chakra. Hold it, hold it, hold it. And gently, gently let go. Breathe in the orange and red of a sunset. Breathe in those stunning, beautiful, swirling colors into your root chakra. And take that energy fine and out your crown. Exhale. Breathe in yellow, the yellow of a buttercup, the yellow of the sun. Bring it into your third eye. Light it up, light it up. Allow your intuition to enhance. And gently exhale. Breathe in silver and gold. Sparkling silver, sparkling gold, sparkling crystal and white. To every aspect of who you are, all your cells, all your chakras, everything. Allow yourself to fill up with peace, with light, with miracles, with energy. And now, slowly exhale. Let's go. Continue breathing at your own pace. Our affirmation for today, our intention, our words of wisdom, our prayer are, I live from my heart and soul. Once again, say it, feel it, let it resonate within you. Any aspect that may feel different, smile and go with this. Lift your energies higher and it will resonate clearly. I live from my heart and soul. I live from my heart and soul. Of course, I do. I live from my heart, my soul. And folks, when one really does that, one is in alignment with Source. And when a person truly is living from his or her heart and soul, they will be making decisions that are in alignment with what is good for the planet, what is good for them, what is good for all, because we are all, in essence, in harmony. Now, I know if someone looks at the planet, we can see different things. It's posted, I post it, okay, sometimes, and I like only putting positive stuff on my Facebook page, but every little once in a while, when I feel that some shaking up must be occurring, I will post some of what human beings are inadvertently doing with our planet by lifestyles, ways of thinking, negative habits. And we are living at a time when making change and literally living from what is actually wonderful for us has us feel good, keeps us healthy and buoyant, and benefits the planet is actually becoming, it's always a choice. However, now it's becoming almost a responsibility and a have to. And I am someone who absolutely suggests thing by choice, and to make this a choice is up-leveling our energy. Our guest, and I take great pleasure in presenting Karen Ellis Ritter. Let me tell you something about her. Karen is the president and co-founder of the Vegan Outreach and Educational 501c3 nonprofit organization called Compassionate Farming Education Initiative, CFEI. The website is compassionatefarming.org. She has over 20 years of experience in independent study in holistic medicine and nutrition with focus on immunity, gut health, infant and toddler nutrition, and vegan cuisine. She's also a passionate animal rights advocate and has been so for nearly two decades. And she's actually developed curriculum on targeted. I met Karen at one of Earth Save Jeff Tucker's event when she was the speaker, and she so impressed me that I am taking great pleasure to introduce her to you. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you so much for that intro.
Oh,
it's great
my
to be
pleasure.
Here.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let us start with some of your background, how this became important to you, how you came to have this interest, what occurred for you in your life to have you be on this journey?
Well, I think from a very early age, I had a very strong connection to animals, but like most people, and, you know, in society, I had that connection with the animals that I had contact with. I grew up in a very carnivorous household. You know, I ate a lot of meat, and I just didn't make that connection, but I had very deep bonds with the animals I encountered. And, you know, as I went along, I started to, you know, learn more about what's going on. I actually met my first vegan when I was in high school, and, you know, he started giving me an inkling into what was going on. He wasn't, you know, very descriptive or trying to give me a hard sell, but it at least planted a seed. And by the time I got to college, you know, I had, you know, I started reading and I started researching, and I got Animal Liberation and Diet for New America, and I read them back to back, and it just completely rocked my world. All of a sudden, I woke up and everything was a nightmare. I actually, you know, started seeing leather as skin and, you know, fur as animals, and I was, you know, looking at people's plates and seeing suffering, and it really shifted me. So you know, from then on, I mean, I decided that this was something that I needed to do. I felt that animals don't have a voice and that they really need us to champion their rights because they have no voice. They're bred into these facilities where they're, you know, they're used as food or they're tested on in labs and they don't have anybody. So it's really up to us to educate and empower people. Obviously, we can't tell them what to do, but we can at least give them an awareness so that they can make educated and compassionate choices when they purchase things and when they, you know, go about their day. We have choices every single minute of every day. And, you know, we can choose to be aware and loving and compassionate, or, you know, we can choose to ignore what's going on and how great of an impact we have on everything.
Do you want to give any kinds of information about the actual impact, any stats, facts, figures? Because you are a wealth of information. And I've been a vegetarian, for over 40 years, and I've been mostly raw vegan, I would say 80 to 90% raw vegan, or let me figure this out. Maybe 8 years, something like that.
Well, you've had an amazing impact on this world for doing that. I mean, the summary basically say the personal impact, the daily impact of a vegan. You can save as much water by not eating a pound of beef as you can by not showering for almost 6 months. It's pretty incredible. Yeah.
Say that again.
You can save as much water by not eating a pound of beef as you can by not showering for almost 6 months. And each day, a person who eats a vegan diet saves an average of 1,100 gallons of water, 45 pounds of grain, 30 square feet of forested land, 20 pounds COQ equivalent, and one animal's life. So in terms of a personal impact, I mean, that's without advocacy. That's without getting anyone else to do that. You alone have that much impact. So imagine, you know, planting seeds every single day of your life and inspiring other people to shift, even if they, you know, as a result, cut down on their meat consumption levels. Obviously, you know, I encourage people to keep moving forward and to keep shifting towards veganism because it really is, it's the most ethical, it's the most, you know, green friendly, and, you know, it really it's aligned with our values because I think everybody, you know, deep down they want to feel at peace with their choices, and I feel like there's a lot of burying and denial and justifications on why people eat meat. I think a lot of people are struggling with their values versus their palate, and, you know, food is an addiction. It's very emotional, it's very psychological, and it can take a really long time to get unhooked, so to speak, for the people who are just really enmeshed in that culture. And I was one of those people. I mean, I didn't do it overnight, and I did it the way I needed to do it. And as a result, I really do feel like there's nothing in the world that could ever get me to eat an animal product again. So some people can do it overnight, and that's amazing. And some people take some time to shift. Whatever means you need to do to get to that end result, I commend you, I support you, and I'm here for you.
I didn't do it overnight either. It took a while. I also came from a meat-eating family. In fact, I became aware once as I was probably a teenager that what was sitting on my plate was an animal, and for 2 days I was a vegetarian. At that frame. Then another point in my 20s, when I read, Jess Stern's book on, I can't think of the name of it, but it had to do with yoga. And I learned that a vegetarian diet was a higher spiritual diet and better for the body. I said, ooh, I like that. That lasted for a little period of time. And then a little later than that, and I had read at some point, well, later than that, Diet for a Small Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became an out-and-out vegetarian. And then more so and more so and more so. First, ovo-lacto, which means, folks, if you don't know what that means, that it's also eggs and cheese. till I gently morphed into who I am now. When you tell people that 1 pound of meat is the equivalent of, what is it, 11,000 gallons of water?
No, it's far more. You save 1,100 gallons of water per day.
Tell people why that is. Can you explain? Because people will go, how can that be? Can you give them
water
that the animals ate? So if you can give them a real picture.
Okay, so the water required to produce 1 pound of beef, and this is taking into consideration the water used for, you know, growing their feed, the water they drink, just every aspect of meat production, the water required to produce 1 pound of beef is on average 2,500 gallons. And in some very dry regions, it can go up to 5,200 gallons of water per pound of beef. Consider how big a steer is. You could get like a 2,000-pound steer.
I'm from New York, so it's hard for me to see how big they are. I don't see them, actually, but they're huge because they have...
They're gigantic, and it's significant. And, I mean, worldwide agriculture accounts for 93% of water depletion, and the vast majority of fresh water is used for animal feed production. So it basically takes 100 times more water to produce 1 pound of animal protein than it does to produce 1 pound of grain protein. 100 times more water to produce meat. So,
do you
have
any... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No problem.
No. Complete. I'm sorry.
Oh, I did. I'm fine.
Do you have any of the stats on how much more food we would have to feed people both in the United States and all over the planet with the burgeoning population that we have if more people were vegetarian?
Yeah, actually I do. I mean, our world hosts nearly 6.8 billion humans, and almost 1 billion of those humans are malnourished. 6 million
mm-hmm.
children starve to death every single year. And animal agriculture is feeding half of the world's grain crop to animals raised for food. Half of the world's grain. The animals that we're basically breeding to eat. I mean, that is such gross inefficiency. As, you know, aside from the ethics, I mean, if we stopped breeding animals for food and redistributed those foodstuffs to the hungry, we would effectively wipe out world hunger. That's what that means. You know, so... And even just when you talk about, like, you know, the land mass, so nearly 80% of the agricultural land in the U.S. is used to feed farm animals, 80%. So,
wow.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah,
That's
it's
huge.
Ridiculous. If
That's
you think
huge.
About, look, and here's another fact that is pretty staggering. 1.5 acres can produce 37,000 pounds of plant-based food, okay? That same amount of space can produce only 375 pounds of meat. So we're talking 37,000 pounds of plant-based food versus 375 pounds of meat. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's staggering inefficiency.
I also find it horrendous that, and this is nothing new, but it's ongoing, that, and I'm not sure how much more can go on, but how much crops, how many, the Amazon rainforest being chopped down and forests simply so that cows can graze. And how
many
people...
And it's only harvestable for one cycle.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I find it... Listen, when I read Diet for a Small Plant by Francis Moore-Lapay in the 70s, boy, that was a wake-up call. That was before
mm-hmm.
the book that you, okay? That was a major, major wake-up call. And what a lot of people that may not have ever had real vegetarian food, and I'm not talking about a piece of wilted iceberg lettuce and a tomato that never ripened, okay? Which, frankly, I would not allow in my apartment, my home. I'll be straight up about that. Nor would I eat it at a restaurant unless absolutely nothing, because that's a no. with no disrespect for anyone who you're laughing, okay? But you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not my diet.
No, mine either. Many people who have never really eaten vegan food, including some of the yummy desserts, I'm someone who loves desserts.
Oh, yeah.
Has any idea of how delicious it is? Is there anything
especially
you'd like
now
to say about? Yes!
Yeah, I mean, they have upped their game, and honestly, anyone who has money to invest in the stock market needs to start investing in plant-based meats and dairy, because it is booming, it's exploding, and it's not, you know, isolated to vegans and vegetarians. There are a lot of omnivores that are very interested in, you know, cutting back. And so these businesses, I mean, you know, you've got a lot of, you know, wealthy individuals that are, you know, putting their stock in these new companies like Beyond Meat and Gardein and, you know, Turtle Island Foods and, you know, the Tofurky Company. Field Roast is another really big one. They just came out with a huge game changer called Chow. It's like a sliced cheese that really just tastes exactly like regular cheese. Kite Hill is another fabulous nut-based cheese. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm, as I said, 80 to 90% raw, so the rest is vegetarian or vegan, but not necessarily raw. Otherwise, I would admire raw, which is, I found it quite tasty. I want to know where I can get more at a somewhat better price than what I paid, which we can talk about where to get these things, and I'd like to try some of those others, because I actually like the taste of cheese. I just don't eat dairy.
Sure.
Okay, as I said, mostly raw vegan. And this
cheese is
good.
It's amazing. And, you know, cheese is the hardest for most people. But, and you might recall in the presentation I gave, the reason cheese is so addictive is because it contains caseomorphins, which is essentially morphine. And it's naturally occurring. You know, when a mammal breastfeeds their child, the morphine, it's a morphine-type chemical that comes out when they're nursing to ensure that, you know, the child will get enough milk, will continue to latch. So what happens is, you know, when they express out all the water to create cheese, it's like a super condensed, you know, version of that. So it actually leaves people with this kind of high, like a drug-like feeling of being satiated. So that's really what that is. People are actually chemically addicted to cheese, and once it's out of your system, you don't really think about it, but, you know, for the people that are still eating it, it is. It's an addiction. It's an addiction some people are addicted to carbs or to sugar. When it's in your system, you crave it, and, you know, you have to get to that space where you've eliminated it in order to not crave it anymore. So, I know for me, that was probably the last thing that I clung to. And I just couldn't live with myself. I felt, you know, such a severe contradiction every time I put that in my mouth. I just imagined suffering, and I felt horrendous, and I just gave it up. And I feel completely at peace with who I am, with everything on my plate. It's, you know, that to me resonates so much more than any temporary flavor, being able to feel at peace.
See, that's where I'm at. Okay. A lot of us, I have a book coming out, Thin, Vigor, Vitality, Vegan. I can't give a date yet because I'm getting out my children's book first, and then that book, which is going to be very easy for people to get because it's a PDF. It'll be $9.67 plus tax, and it'll be about health first and then recipes, of course.
Wonderful.
And I remember when I studied with Dr. Brenda Cobb at the Living Foods Institute in Atlanta. She said something that I'd never heard this way, and you said it also similarly. She said, cooked foods are an addiction. And that was the first time I'd ever heard it put that way. It's an addiction. And I know, I come from New York, I'm now in Florida, and when it gets cold in New York, where it can get seriously cold, I would go to the root vegetables and make various what I call root in Florida, mm-hmm. One doesn't need that, okay? However, one could even do partial raw, partial cooked vegetarian, vegan, even in a cold place like a New York damp winter, and thrive. Mm-hmm. I did it for years. What initiatives are you putting forth to help people make a change? And what are some of the initiatives you're putting forth on your website, compassionatefarming.org?
So, you know, I'm not looking to reinvent the wheel. I'm looking to fill in gaps, and I'm looking to take all the best resources from all over the internet and place them in one place. So basically, CSEI is a virtual library, and it's continually expanding. We've got thousands of links. We've got, on our resources page, we've got, you know, documentary recommendations, book recommendations. We've got a bazillion different, you know, like food blogs and recipe sites, places to purchase everything vegan related, you know, all these different organizations that are doing various things within, you know, vegan outreach. Because one of the things, you know, we really want to do is promote other organizations. You know, we want to create, you know, a situation where everyone's working together, and, you know, we want to empower all of these organizations to have even greater exposure. So really the vision of CFEI is that everything is open source. So all the things that we're developing are eventually going to be open source downloadable materials. So one of the big initiatives that we will be rolling out shortly is I developed a targeted advocacy workshop curriculum. And it's, you know, it's part take-home journaling exercises, it's part sharing, and it's part lecture. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to roll out a test run where we have, you know, between 10 and 12 people volunteering to do, you know, about six sessions that are about 2 hours each. And we'll all get together and we'll essentially vet the material. I'll get feedback. And once it's in a space where it is ready to go, it's going to become a downloadable asset where basically anybody who, you know, who wants to do this workshop, you know, who wants to basically head up the workshop, they can download it and they can get together with other advocates and really, you know, sharpen up their skills, get in touch, like reconnect with how they got into veganism and what it means to them. And honestly, the techniques really, they're really applied to any form of advocacy work. It's not just related to veganism. It's actually getting back to your source and becoming more open, compassionate, and accepting of others in the place that they're at, just kind of loving them for where they are and who they are, and empowering them to shift and basically offering support. So, I mean, one of our biggest messages in our outreach work is, look, I'm not telling you what to do with this information because you're going to do what you want regardless. It's your journey. But my hope is that learning the truth and creating an awareness will open people up so that they can, you know, they can evolve and move forward, become more enlightened, become, you know, more compassionate, and make choices that really resonate with that deep core belief that, you know, do no harm. Because I really think everybody feels that way on a deep level, that they, you know, they want to be in a space of love. But, you know, there's just so much denial. There's so many things that, you know, all of us have it. All of us are afraid to look in the mirror and find contradictions. So this workshop actually gets you deep into your core so that you can kind of parse out, you know, the underlying beliefs that aren't serving you and really get deeply connected with the person in front of you so that, you know, your conversations aren't kind of spilling over into your advocacy work. Like those conversations of, you know, do I sound right? You know, am I doing this right? Are they judging me? All these little, you know, all the noise in the background kind of melts away and you just become a person connecting with another person. So I think that there's, you know, a deep need for all of us to kind of get back in touch with that source and to just let it flow.
Well, since I'm a healer and that's some of the work I do, I totally understand and agree with it. And I'd love to be part of some of those early groups hoping
Excellent.
To
I would love
together.
To have you there.
I mean, that's a yes. And I know some other people, which I'm not going to give names right now on the air. But absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've been a vegetarian for over 41 years, okay? There's a reason
mm-hmm.
for that. And I know what my journey was. It wasn't a finger snap, oh, boom, that's it. No, it was a process. And I'd be delighted to help others. And, of course, I have a book that could really help
that's
others.
Wonderful.
Yeah, all of that kind of stuff. Do you teach about or do you know about the importance for a person to be alkaline, to be healthy, and how veganism supports that, whereas meat eating makes them acid? Do you know about that?
Yes. Actually, meat and dairy both cause acidity and inflammation, which basically leads to every disease known to man at this point. I mean, you know, we're talking heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, hypertension. All of those things are caused by inflammation in the system. And when we alkalize by, drinking lots of water and having, cruciferous vegetables, lots of raw, lots of dark leafy greens, that alkalizes the system. So when people shift from this, very meat and dairy intensive Western diet, and they go into this alkaline diet, they actually a lot of times will kind of feel crappy for a week or two because their body is just ridding itself of all these toxins that are, that are causing the inflammation. That's the time to really stay with people and coach people because, you don't want them to attribute those negative side effects to, oh, well, vegan diet doesn't work for me, I got sick. I find a lot of people do that. They don't stick it out because they feel, they feel crappy while they're detoxing, and then they think that that's how they're going to feel. But what actually happens is if they stick it out, they feel incredible. They feel light. Their bloating goes away. Their gas goes away. Headaches go away a lot of the time. People who have suffered from IBS all their lives, they see a reduction in all these negative symptoms. A lot of yeast problems get under control because dairy just, it fuels candida. It's definitely something that, when people ask me about, I have type 2 diabetes or I have high cholesterol, how can I reduce it? I always say to people, lots of raw. I mean, I still eat a lot of cooked food, but what I tend to do is I'll do raw for my breakfast and lunch, and then I do a cooked dinner. So that's kind of how I balance that out. But green drinks, I don't even juice. I actually like to blend because I want to get all the fiber. But you just do like fresh ginger and kale, and, I'll take bananas and different berries and, make a really delicious shake and put some Garden of Life Perfect Food greens in there. And it's amazing. It fills you up. And, you can go all day and you have energy and you're not bloated. So, yeah, it's a wonderful way of life. It really is.
Well, I drink Kangen water. I'm a distributor. I'm even doing a Kangen event. Oh, you're invited. I'm doing a Kangen event, if you'd like, at my apartment this Sunday from 2 to 4, which anybody wants to go, let me know. Let me give you a phone number. May I give the number that I usually call you at?
Sure.
Give the home one. I don't have that in front of me. How about you say that number?
Okay. If you would like to get more information on CFEI, you can either go on our website, and the URL is compassionatefarming.org. Or you can call 561-509-8220 for more information
as
well.
Right, that's 561-509-8220.
Correct.
Speak with Karen, okay? And Karen is a fount of wisdom in this area and in other areas, but we're speaking specifically this. We'll tell you about condom water. You're welcome. I've seen people be healed of cancer by alkalizing themselves with this water. I've seen a child, 10-year-old, go beyond autism in drinking the water because of the way the chemistry in the people's bodies changed because of the blood-brain barrier, as called by Dr. Corinne Allen in her Brain Institute in Idaho. She says when that, the blood-brain barrier becomes alkaline and the brain becomes alkaline, many of these, she says all, of these diseases, whether autism or Alzheimer's, even epilepsy, caused, she says, by an acidic brain and blood-brain barrier and body begin to disappear, and she's having huge success. Folks, I'm going to say this as nicely as I can, because I can get seriously passionate, and my guidance from sources that it's very important for me to stay on the high level and not get caught in that other personality aspect I could sometimes have. I would say almost every disease in this country, every condition, whether one calls it a disease or not, whether we want to call it obesity, alcoholism, diabetes, heart situations, can all be healed by changing thought pattern and changing food intake and changing water. What do you say to that also?
Well, I mean, as we've talked about in the past, I haven't tried the Kangen water yet, but I'm certainly open to it. And
good.
I do think that, you know, I certainly don't use tap water. I believe in drinking purified water, so I think it could definitely be a wonderful thing.
I will supply you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will supply you for a few weeks. Yeah, and I know some of your personal situation, which is personal, so I'm not going to go into it. And it will help. It will help. Just have to
awesome.
Get someone
Thank
to
you.
Come here because of my lack of a car situation. And I also don't like having a personal car because I don't like using gasoline. Plus, which the whole thing about driving is not something I'm yet excited about. What else?
No, none of us are. None of us like it. Trust me.
Not just me.
No.
Okay.
I drive way more than I would like to.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Excellent. Okay, good. Good, good, good. What else would you like to share with people? Out of all of what you know, let's have some tidbits of whatever you feel would make a difference in their lives or is your particular
okay.
passion.
So I actually want to talk about Yulin, what's going on at the, you know, in China with the dog meat trade. Because I think a lot of people are, you know, understandably outraged by what's going on. These animals are, you know, they're boiled alive, they're skinned alive, there's just absolutely no compassion. And we're just experiencing this huge outrage here. But what's amazing is we are not, maybe not all of us, but as a collective society, we are complicit in committing the same acts toward other living beings. So it's been very difficult for me in one way because I feel like, you know, draw the connection, like, they, you know, see what's going on there and see that we're doing the same thing. Like I was posting, for instance, like pictures of slaughter trucks, you know, like the, you know, the shipping trucks. And there were pictures of dogs being shipped to slaughter. And then there were pictures of pigs and chickens being shipped to slaughter. And it looked identical. And, you know, I'm really using this as a challenge to people to see that it's the same thing. You know, and they interviewed a woman who, you know, she's a dog butcher. And, you know, she was saying, this is our culture. We've been doing this for centuries, and it's tradition, and we love the meat. It's delicious. And, you know, I don't understand what the big deal is. You know, Americans are protesting this, but when they stop eating pigs and cows and chickens, then maybe we'll stop eating, you know, cats and dogs. And obviously she has no intention of ever stopping, because she knows that, you know, the U.S. has that same belief system that they apply to different animals. There's a movie, a documentary that I really want to recommend, called Speciesism, the movie.
I want to see that. I want to see that.
It is phenomenal. It will get every person in this world thinking and opening their eyes. I brought a couple friends to see it at the, you know, there was like a screening of it in Boca, and one of my friends went vegan that night. And I'm just so thrilled that she went and that she got to experience that, because she, you know, I mean, these people, they have, you know, they have dogs and they're their children, you know, and I have, you know, dogs and I have a dog and two cats, and they're my children too. And I deeply love them, but I also deeply love other animals. You know, I've visited farm sanctuaries, and, you know, like I recently went to Rooterville, and the pigs were amazing. They run up to you and their tails are wagging, they headbutt, they roll over for belly rubs. I mean, they're babies, they're beings. They have, you know, they have personalities and awareness and individualism, and they want to live. And what we're doing here is the same thing. It's the exact same thing. You know, and I think one of the things that people bring up all the time is, well, a lot of the dogs and cats were stolen. They were pets. So my question is, well, is it that they're dogs and cats, or that they used to be pets? Because people have pigs as pets. You know, mm-hmm. Really, what is it? What is the root? When you think of any prejudice that has caused an atrocity, whether it's slavery or the Holocaust, or, you know, any kind of, you know, the public executions, you know, like raping the people from the village that people would conquer, all these different things, people would say the same thing. It's okay, because these beings are different. These beings are not on a level playing field with me. Therefore, I can do what I want. The same justification is always there for people when they decide that another being is less worthy of kindness and fair treatment than another. And that's what we do every day when we choose to eat meat, because we're essentially saying, okay, I love my cat, I love my dog, but they're different. Why are they different? What's different about them? So I'm hoping that, you know, now that there's such public outrage and such widespread awareness about what's going on in Yulin, that people will actually start waking up to what we're doing here and question it. Because, you know, these animals here are tortured too. These animals are, you know, they're hacked while unconscious. I mean, sorry, they're hacked alive and conscious much of the time, because, you know, the speed and the inefficiency of, you know, the volume of these factory farm operations don't afford accuracy. So they'll try to stun them, but most of the time these animals are fully conscious when they're hacked apart. You know, chickens are immersed in boiling water, just like the dog. So all of these horrific things that are going on, we're doing it. The only difference is we're paying someone to commit the atrocity. And my question is, well, there is are you aware of the karma when you are paying another person to commit an atrocity, that becomes your karma? You're essentially complacent in that. And so, you know, I just want soul to evolve to a space where we are not paying other people to do things that we ourselves could not do, and that we can enjoy ourselves, like you said, eating delicious, nutritious, healthy and sustainable food that no one had to suffer for. And until we as a society can really set that example, it's really hard to impact another nation that is doing the same thing, just with different species. So, you know, I want people to understand that there is no distinction between one species over another, because, you know, all species can experience the exact same emotional range. They can experience the same pain. They all experience the same fear. So, I mean, really, the only way to have a mass consciousness shift and the only way that we can have peace in this world is if we stop subjugating, torturing, and murdering other beings that share this planet. Because it's not survival. We don't need it. We can thrive without hurting others.
We would actually thrive better, way better, beyond better, if we stop hurting other creatures and use the land properly. Because what I'm going to say is, one, when any of those animals, and it doesn't matter what kind of animal, I completely agree with you, okay? First of all, is when they're killed, the fear comes in them because they know animals,
absolutely.
Every animal. I've had cats. I mean, they are conscious, and all of them. Although I come from the city, when I was in Africa, I saw little pigs and goats and these kinds of things, and they have consciousness, for heaven's sakes, and the roosters and whatnot. And they know when they're going to be killed. They know it. And the fear, that toxin goes right into their flesh, and people eat that vibration. Plus, when somebody, they do. And when somebody is killing something and one is eating that, first of all, it's dead. So they're not really getting any of the living life force you get when you're a vegan, okay, or alive, any live food, even salads, okay, it's live, okay, especially if you can eat it soon after harvest. And then they get logy and heavy, even if they're in good shape with muscles and stuff like that. It's a different quality innately. And on the deeper level, on the emotional, energetic matrix level, that can't lie, not the mental thinking level, that part knows when something is an inappropriate energy or not. That part knows if something has been created truly in love or not. And it's very
true.
Important to heal some of the, what shall I call this, the emotional, internal, energetic, psychic split that goes on with people, whether we call it that or not, that they may not even be able to identify. Part of it is this. Not only this, okay, this isn't the whole of it, but part of it is this. Because
it absolutely is.
Yes, as essence.
You're ingesting suffering, disease, and cortisol.
Yes, we can't.
Yes.
Yeah, we can't countenance that and feel peace inside. Now, I'm not saying sit there and be in misery, because that's not going to do anyone any good at all. Very important that we lift our energies and our frequency and vibe that, send that on the planet to help make a shift. And then this kind of stuff won't happen so much, less and less, because the vibration on the earth won't even permit it. You know what I'm saying? And all
yeah,
the work
but it's,
you're
it's
doing,
a cycle. It's a cycle because people are ingesting the meat and they are becoming more aggressive, more angry, more depressed, more sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's like a cyclical thing where the more you ingest that, the more you project that. And the more you project that, the more you ingest that. So really, I mean, in order to create peace, it's so multidimensional, because there is that psychic level of, you know, ingesting the suffering and the karma. And there's also, you know, disease that is occurring as a result.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at who are our ancestors? We descended from apes, and they're herbivores. You know, we have blunt, flat teeth. We've got long, coiled colons. And the average meat eater in the United States has 5 pounds of undigested rotting meat in their colon, because the colon is not meant to break down copious amounts of meat. It's meant to break down roughage. You know, if you look at like a wildcat, they have short, smooth colons, and their meat passes, you know, partially undigested. So it's a very, you know, our makeup is different. And then, you know, so there's just all of these different things. But actually, I just got on Facebook for a second to pull up something that I wrote about you, Lynn. Would you mind if I read it? It's a paragraph.
No, go ahead. No. Be my guest. Okay. As you are. Go.
Okay. So when I was talking about the transport trucks, this is what I wrote. I invite you all to take a moment to put aside your preconceptions and cultural assertions about which animals deserve to be loved and which ones deserve to be eaten. I've seen so many people expressing outrage about the dog and cat meat trade in China, and rightfully so. The treatment of these sentient beings is brutal and heartless, including being boiled and skinned alive. We should all be outraged. However, the other species in these photos endure the same fear, the same outrageous suffering, the same stressed cortisol pulses through their young bodies. They fear, they hurt, they cry, and they are well aware of what is coming. Animals on these transport trucks are all thinking, feeling, sentient beings who will be brutally murdered to satisfy a human's palate. Pigs, chickens, goats, lambs, turkeys, cows, and other animals will often be hacked apart and skinned while conscious because the volume and speed of production does not afford accuracy. Some of these animals were grass-fed and humane certified. Some languish for their entire young lives in factory farms. Their end suffering is the same, regardless of how they lived before they got on a transport truck. Our hearts ache about the dog slaughter because we regard them as our companion animals. That distinction is an emotionally driven one. There is no difference between dogs and other animals bred for meat in their ability to suffer and their awareness of what is being done to them. These horrific images should inspire pause and deep introspection. Do your values align with what is on your plate?
Excellent. Horrifying.
You.
And it's meant to
yeah.
be. Excellent. Fabulous.
Thank
fabulous.
You.
Fabulous. I truly do want you to come to my Toastmasters. The reason I didn't go to see Speciesism in Boca was it was on a Wednesday. I'm the outgoing vice president of education at Toast of Las Olas, and we meet on Wednesdays. And
oh, okay.
Actually, no, this is my last month. Okay. Vice president. I'm still in the club. But as VTE, it's sometimes very important that I'm there. And now, unless I'm speaking, and I still take on a bunch of different roles, I intend to take some other time for myself and other things I need to do, such as seeing a movie like Speciesism, when that's the only time I was able to find anywhere where it was being shown, because that's very important to me. Now, we have a few little bits of moments. Let me give your phone number again, your email, and I'm going to give the info email and the website.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Folks, you can reach Karen, and it's Karen Ellis Ritter, at 561-509-8220. That's 561-509-8220. Her website is compassionatefarming.org. Compassionatefarming.org. And her email is info@compassionatefarming.org. We have six more moments. I'm going to ask you if there's anything else you'd like to say before I close the show. And it's been a delight, an absolute delight to have you.
Thank you. Likewise. Really, I just want to encourage people to get on the site. It's an amazing resource. I've vetted and handpicked every single link on there. And I can tell you, if you want to see Speciesism or Cowspiracy or any of the really great documentaries out right now, we have links to everything. A lot of them are available streaming online. And to those who have never visited a farm sanctuary, I just want to emphatically express how important it is to go, to connect with these animals, to see who they are, to get to know them. These are animals that are used to other people, and you will see the most beautiful soul connection. It's sublime. It is the best feeling in the world to connect with these animals. And we have a directory of all the U.S. farm sanctuaries, and it's all by state. So you can search for farm sanctuaries in your area according to state and look them up and go. Just, you know, book a date and go, because it is really a transformational experience.
Thank you so much, Karen. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for who you are, the work you do, the shifts you're making, what you bring forth. I've been on your website. I've shared a lot of the links in previous shows. Folks, this is the real deal. The reason I'm doing these vegan shows, just so you know, it isn't just because I have a book coming out called Vim Vigor Vitality Vegan. I have a book coming out because this is important. That's why. Okay?
So true.
I'll be straight up. I don't write books that I don't think are important on the planet that we need to know about. That's why I wrote The Mother's Manual, A Spiritual and Practical Guide to Child Rearing and Motherhood, that's on Kindle. And I will have PDFs. And I'll have 20 little PDFs that are smaller than the real, the main book, okay, because it's part of the book, but each stands on its own. Again, Karen can be reached at 561-509-8220, 561-509-8220, CompassionateFarming.org, CompassionateFarming.org. And info@CompassionateFarming.org. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, Audrey. I really...
I'm sorry, I did not mean to stop Karen in the midst of a word. I so apologize for that. I do want people to know that everything we know is choice, and the more one eats, vegetarian and vegan, one's consciousness actually begins to grow, which supports that lifestyle. It goes together. Like I was told by, it was, I believe, a scientist, that if someone drinks a lot of alcohol, an alcoholic who drinks a lot, that their brain actually gets smaller. And I was told, now I don't recall who, so I can't give you whom the provenance of it, that when someone eats a lot of meat, not only do they become acidic, consciousness can go down. And folks, we need all of us to be as conscious and aware as possible. Absolutely. And in case anyone feels overwhelmed, one step at a time. It isn't all of a sudden. One step at a time. For those of you who have been asking, my book, The Mother's Manual, A Spiritual and Practical Guide to Child Rearing and Motherhood, it is almost ready to go to print. As soon as it's fully ready, there are a few little bits and pieces that still have to be placed in. And this book will be printed on 100% recycled paper. And this particular book is saving 8 trees. You can reach me for any of the work I do, whether it's healing, the books, art, water, whatever it may be, at 1-888-757-3223. That's 1-888-3, and do you know what that spells? That's not what it spells. It spells 1-888-75-PEACE. P-E-A-C-E. Now, our closing blessing. May you be filled with the living light of creation. May your choices in life support the very essence that you are. May the very essence that you are clearly to you. And sometimes the essence speaks by feeling, by intuition, by impulses, so that on this earth you live the best, happiest, most joyous, most conscious, uplifted life possible. Thank you for listening. We'll be with you next week. And bye for now. Bye-bye.